Episode 13, Season 3, this is the Bad Apples Linux Cast. Hi everyone, this is episode 13 of the Bad Apples, and my name is Klaatu. I'm going to be your host today. If you're at all new to this podcast, you might have heard me on other podcasts. Maybe you're checking out the podcast that I do. So this is it. It's a Linux Cast. It's about technology and geeky stuff and a lot about, you know, Linux and free software and stuff like that. And then I want to talk about free software animation applications. So, because there's actually quite a few out there, and that's a good topic. I want to give some updates on some various things that have been going on around here. Just, you know, general stuff. So let's get started. So everyone knows, I think, that in animation, in professional animation, and film production in general, especially effects-driven film production in general, there's a lot of Linux being used. And I talked a little bit about this, I think it was probably in Season 2. I talked a little bit about this when I went to the National Association of Broadcasters convention. It's called NAB. It's a huge convention, and it covers every aspect of production, both pre-production, production, and post-production. And I went there with a little bit of the intention to find out what Linux was being used where. And I kept finding it in the most interesting places. And if you're interested in that, you might want to listen to whatever episode it was that I talk about that. But for this, I'm going to focus more on animation stuff, because that's what I've been really interested in lately. And I hope at some point to be able to sort of do a mini-series or something, or maybe a talk at an expo or something, about like the workflow of animation production and or video production on Linux, because that's kind of an important thing to grasp, is, you know, how it all comes together, which component you drop in at what point, stuff like that. And it's surprising, I think, the whole Unix philosophy of, you know, one application doing one thing and doing it well. It's surprising how applicable to life in general. I know I'm getting really philosophical here, but it's applicable to life in general in many ways, because you've got like these singular elements that you need to accomplish in order to get something larger done. And the same goes for instance, a film production where you're or an animation production where you know that you want to end up with moving pictures that talk. It doesn't all happen in one application. Even in proprietary software that feature, you know, really big bloated programs, even they don't do everything in one application. You've got lots of little applications, or a couple of slightly less large applications, coming together to produce one finished product. And so with Linux, it's no different, and in fact, it's perhaps a little bit more. So, you know, you've got your application to write your script, you've got your application to record the script, you've got your application to then mix the script, you've got your application to then take that soundtrack and animate pictures over it, and you've got your application to edit the different scenes that you have now animated together, things like that. Lots of steps there that I would like to go over sometime, but right now that's not really the scope of this. This is more what's out there for Linux in terms of animation, because that's an interesting question. So a lot of these big production companies, these big animation houses, are using in-house applications that they've developed. When you're doing something like that, a lot of times I think it does just make sense to use Linux, because not only do you have a code base already there, well, I guess the classic and obvious example would be Cinepaint. Cinepaint is they took GIMP code and rearranged it and added some stuff to it to create something called Cinepaint, which was simply something that could handle greater color depth and was more focused on doing frame-by-frame retouching, things like that. So that's a classic example. Now, it is not in, I mean, it might have started in-house. I'm not really 100% sure where it started, but it was developed, you know, off of GIMP code, and it was, you know, it was GPL, they have to give it back. So we have Cinepaint now. Now, in some animation places, they've done similar things and developed, you know, different applications to help them either organize character, the different parts of the characters, right arm with fur, right arm, skeletal structure, you know, just different things that they that go into making like 3D animation stuff. There's a lot of stuff out there that's being used that we know is being used, but we don't have access to it because it was developed in-house. It's very specific to their own workflow, to the way that they do their animation. So it's being used, but we're not seeing a whole lot of it out in the world because it is either proprietary, they wrote it for themselves and not for us, or it's very specific to what they're doing, or it is too expensive for us, because there are animation programs out there that run on Linux quite well and are simply too expensive for the average Joe to purchase. And again, if you listen to my NAB report, you would know that the company that is sort of most active in this would be Autodesk. And Autodesk is the sole proprietor of the one that you've probably heard of is Maya, M-A-Y-A, 3D animation program. It's proprietary, not free, and it costs quite a lot of money. It works on all three platforms and is used, you know, in professional production houses. And then there's there are other proprietary applications like Smoke and Inferno and Flame and Flint and things like that. Those are all effects. More of the effectsy kind of animation packages. They're not really animation. They're really geared around like compositing and visual effects and things like that. But they're really cool, which is why I think Blender can come in there and grab that market. But I digress. More on that later. So what is out there for us? Obvious answer would be Blender, right? So Blender can do 3D animation. It can do 2D animation. And yes, I said 2D animation. If you go to Blender.org. And hunt around, and I'll try to hunt around for this myself so I can post the link on the site, on Bad Apple, the show notes. If you go there, you will find some demo pieces of animation that people have done in Blender that was just 2D animation. Very traditional looking, you know, animation, and it's really neat. It's really cool to see what people have done with Blender, because Blender, everyone kind of thinks automatically 3D animation. That's what it does, right? Well, no, you know, like I've already said, it does video editing, and it does 2D animation as well. So once again, Blender, speaking of the Unix philosophy and snubbing it, Blender is something that does many things, and it actually does many things quite well. So there's Blender, but focus in a little bit more on a traditional, what we would, you know, more traditional feeling animation package. When you think of computer animation, one of the things that comes, I think, immediately to mind is Flash. That kind of moved in and just kind of said, okay, everyone, this is what computer animation is now. And I'm talking before Flash video became so ubiquitous. This was well before YouTube. This was, you know, back when, you know, like, what were those things called? Joe's Cartoons or something like that, where you had the frog in the blender and they would blend the frog and just stupid stuff like that, you know? So this is, that was kind of computer-based animation that kind of set the stage. And that was back when Flash was, you know, Macromedia, not Adobe. Things like that. Okay, so that's kind of the interface that people often are looking for when they say, oh, I want to animate on the computer. The great thing about, you know, Flash and about animating and stuff like that is that it can be deliverable on the internet because it's vector and it tends to be fairly small size, or you can even do something bigger and better and release it on video because animation is animation. And again, vectors, it will scale up just as well as they will scale down. Definitely good. And if you don't know what vector is, you probably do, but you know, there's bitmaps where you just take a digital picture and everything is just pixel per pixel. And then there's vector where you're drawing like a line from point A to point B. All the computer has to remember is that there is a point at A and B, and it can calculate what that line looks like between those two points. No matter, you know, it's all relative, right? If the A and B, if I'm looking at the computer screen and it's an inch apart, the computer can calculate that line. There it goes. Now, if that A and B, if it's on my screen and I blow it up and it's now like 5 inches apart, it's still the same, it's still relative, and the computer can still just calculate, okay, that line now looks like this. So it's a lot less, as opposed to the computer having to remember, okay, there's a pixel here, 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 you know, and do it pixel per pixel. It's a lot more intensive, doesn't scale up or down as well, because then it has to figure out, ooh, I need to add some pixels, or, oh, I need to throw out some pixels. Vector looks cleaner, so there you go, that's vector. So for a Flash-like interface, there are actually about three different animation packages out there that come to mind. One of them I had never really even heard of until very recently, It's called Synfig, or Synfig. Don't really know how to say it. So we'll call it Synfig. I like Synfig. So it was started out as a little proprietary app, I guess, by a guy who was starting his own animation studio, Voria. And his first production was called Prologue, and that got some play at Anime Expo in 2004, as well as Comic-Con 2004. It's kind of cool. And I guess he was the only guy doing the software development, and having your own company is not exactly a part-time job in itself, so he was doing like all the like company kind of stuff. It sounds like a nightmare to me, so what he did was he kind of dissolved Voria, and luckily figured that probably that application that he was using was too good to just throw out, and so he opened the code, you know, it went to GPL, opened it up to the community, and it is now being, you know, further developed, which is really, really cool, very exciting, especially since it's actually a really cool application. If you go to synfig.org, that's synfig.org, so that's Syn, S as in Sam, Y, N as in Nancy. Oh, who cares? I'll just put it in the show notes. Synfig.org. If you go there, there are screenshots, and it kind of shows off a little bit of what it can do, and you'll get an idea of what it looks like, what kind of palette structure it has. And it's very encouraging to look at, even better to install. Over the past weekend, I tried installing it because I just had my Triple EPC on me, right? So I installed it on there. I was shocked to find that it was running really, really well on the Triple E. Telling you, that little Triple E keeps surprising me. I will say that about it. And it's funny because my Sony laptop keeps disappointing me. Like every time it's 15-inch laptop. It's basically the same internals as like a MacBook, and that thing just slow, clunky, horrible machine. Horrible, horrible machine. Anyone wants to buy a Sony laptop, let me know. $300, it's yours. But it's a horrible machine, so buyer beware. Yeah, so Synfig worked great on the Triple E. The cool thing about it, if you go to synfig.org/download, that's download with a capital D, you will be amazed to find how many packages they have for this thing. They are not kidding around. They've got the source code. They've got it for Windows. Theoretically, they have it for Mac, although I can't get it to install at work. Oh, no, you know what? They took the Mac version offline because it has serious issues. That's their term. Ubuntu, got it for Ubuntu. What a surprise. Got it for Debian. That was easy. You got it for Zenwalk, Gentoo, Arch, Pardis, FreeBSD, SUSE, Slackware, Fedora, Mandriva, and Momonga. I don't really know what that is, to be honest. So it's really cool. I mean, they got the hookup. Now for Debian, and for all of them, I'm sure, what you need to install is its aptitude install Synfig, and that. The Synfig just loads in like the back end and stuff, and there's actually some kind of command line interface for it as well. But don't be fooled, that's not all there is. Then you also need to do an aptitude install Synfig Studio, and that's the GUI interface. Synfig Studio will give you all the real things. The interface itself is really quite traditional in terms of what you would expect in a computer-based animation program. There are a couple of different windows. There's a tool palette on the left. This is where you will find all of your typical drawing tools. It's a little bit less versatile, I would say, than something like Inkscape. You know, I mean, if you think of all the versatility of Inkscape, you're not quite getting that with these tools. In terms of being able to draw some really nice looking stuff, this definitely has the tools for it. And if you look at the screenshots, you'll see some of the things that people have done in this application. You've also got, obviously, like a canvas kind of window going on so that you can draw. And then you've got your timeline and the different attributes of the timeline. You've got layers, and you've got the different components of the different elements on your screen. So yeah, it's a really complete solution. Lots of different things to do. In terms of functionality, just raw animation compared to something like Flash, it's all here. This is exactly what you need. This is it. Don't know anything about like interactive kinds of stuff, like little web animations where you click on a button to blend the frog, you know, that kind of thing on the web where it's kind of interactive, and depending on what you click on, you know, some different animation happens. I don't know if there's any kind of functionality for that sort of thing with this program. It's not really what I'm interested in, so I didn't really think to check for it. But this also has functionality to bring in your soundtrack, because in animation you actually record the sound first and then you animate to the soundtrack. So that's kind of important. That's something you would look for typically in a professional grade animation program. You would want the ability to bring in your soundtrack so that you can time things correctly to that sound, whereas, you know, a hobbyist or a less professional grade animation program would not have that functionality. This has it, so it's very nice. So, Synfig, you should really check that out if you're at all interested in animating on the computer. The other applications that I've found for this, one of them is called K-Tune, and that's a 2D animation toolkit, and is mysteriously offline. I have no idea where it is or why it's offline, but if you go to this website, ktune.tunka.com, just not there. Don't really know what's going on with that, so can't say much about it in terms of where it is, but in terms of its results and where it seemed to be, it seemed really pretty really far along. I mean, I was always impressed with the software when I was playing around with it. It looked really great. I didn't really use it quite as much as I have Synfig, simply because by the time I got around to wanting to use it, their site was gone and I was having a hard time finding, you know, tutorials and stuff like that. So too bad. But yeah, K-Tune is nice. It's really nice. I mean, obviously it's using the Qt toolkit. It's written in C++. Very, very functional. Very, very nice. I have that on a couple of my machines. I haven't used it quite as much simply because the tutorial options weren't as far along as it was with Synfig. I've seen some animations that were done with K-Tune, and I was really impressed. So that, I'm going to go ahead and say that K-Tune appears and seems to be on the level of Synfig. Having said that, I have not used it that much, but the little that I did use it, it seemed to me to be about on par with Synfig. So those two are really great options. Synfig and K-Tune, I would look into both of those. And then there is one that I had first heard about on Linux Outlaws, and had gone there, you know, sometime last year, kind of excited to hear about it, only to discover that in spite of it actually existing, it was only for OS X and Windows. And the guy on the site for Pencil said that he was not really a programmer. I don't know how he made Pencil not being a programmer, but he claims that he's not a programmer, but whipped up Pencil nevertheless, and said that he didn't know how to port it over to Linux, and that if anyone wanted to do it, that they could. And he gave some slight hints on how that was to be done. It eluded me, so oh well. Since that point, it has come farther along, and someone has ported it over to Linux. Someone from Arch, and someone from Ubuntu. So if you're running either Ubuntu or Arch, you could possibly be able to download this and try it. And I will say that I was impressed. Again, I mean, you got the tools over on the left, and again, it's not quite as versatile as something like Inkscape. Overall, it seemed like a pretty good little package, and you can download the source code as well, and you can see demos on the site. Everything looks pretty good. I mean, honestly, it's pretty exciting. They've got an online user manual, and I would even go so far as to say that it might be even more intuitive than either Synfig or K-Tune. That was certainly my impression. It seemed a lot more like just a really rudimentary understanding of animation would kind of get you farther along in Pencil. But what Pencil doesn't have, that I could tell, unless they've just developed it, doesn't really have an asset management system. If you've built a character from all these different components, you know, in Synfig you can have that in a library, so you can have all these different parts of a person, and they're all organized in this little library file, so you can always go back there and grab something if you need it or whatever. Whereas in Pencil, you don't have that, from what I can tell. It's you draw it, and that is it, and you get to tweak it, but that drawing exists only right there. And that seems like it could be a problem for, you know, more professional production workflows. I think that would probably be a hindrance. But if you're just screwing around wanting to do fun little animations, you might want to try Pencil. And I think all of these, in terms of creativity, ease of use, I mean, this is cool stuff. You want to do something fun for a day, just animate. You know, you never know what you'll do. Or if you got a kid who wants to play around on the computer, sit them in front of an animation program. You know, I mean, it'll teach them a lot. It'll get their creative juices going. It just seems like a really good idea to me. Yeah, so that's four packages right there, four applications of free software for animation. So that this is something that Linux is doing really well, I think. So check it out. You got Blender for 3D and 2D. You got Synfig Studio and KTune, and Pencil for traditional 2D. So check those out if you're interested in animation, or, you know, should anyone ask about animation, remember the names of those packages, because those are where they are at. So have fun. Some of you, dear listeners, may have noticed that the MP3 feed for the Bad Apples is missing, and that is, of course, because it is time that the Bad Apples Linux cast goes AUG. Yes, it is time that you and I, this show, bands together and says no to MP3. We need to kill off MP3 together, and the way to do that is to wean ourselves off of being dependent upon it and just rejecting it, throwing it out. So goodbye RSS.xml, which was the MP3 feed. So if you're subscribed to that, that is no longer good. It's going to disappear soon. And hello AUG.xml, which is the AUG feed. So if you're subscribed to that, you're still good. No changes there. And I think this will be a good thing, because I think that if we, you know, me as a podcaster and you as a podcastee, and we're all doing this show, you know, together, your emails and IRC and my rambling and the whole interaction of it all, it's us, you know. So if we band together and say, you know what, for this show, we're not doing the MP3 feed. We're not going to give ourselves that option. We're not going to have MP3 on this site anymore, or associated with this show anymore. Now, I don't track my web traffic. I don't know if this will even affect any of you. I do not know how many people subscribe to my show at all, much less do I know how many people subscribe to the AUG feed versus the MP3 feed. The people that I've talked to, between email exchange, between IRC and people I've met at OLF, the vast majority were listening to the AUG feed. And that kind of got me to thinking that maybe having the MP3 feed was a little bit pointless. But at some point, you know, I think that we have to say, you know what, we're a Linux podcast here. We're talking about free software. We're talking about supporting free software. We're using free software. Why are we doing the MP3 feed? You know, yeah, it might be more convenient sometimes. You know, if you happen to have a media player that doesn't play AUG, I can see that would be pretty convenient. But then again, think of the impression of a newcomer, someone new to the show, you know. Oh, just MP, there's MP3 and there's AUG. Well, obviously AUG isn't quite where it needs to be yet, so they have to offer the MP3. AUG is exactly where it needs to be. It's everyone else who needs to catch up. So, sorry that some of the media players don't support AUG. It's not our problem. It's certainly not, you know, your fault, not my fault. We want it to support AUG. And so at least this show is going to not have MP3. And it's not going to have AAC. And it's not going to have MPEG-4. Anything that even sounds like MPEG is not going to be associated with this show. I can't stand MPEG. I can't stand AAC and their weird licensing scheme. It's AUG. It's free. It sounds great. Well, not the way that I encode it, because I encode it at a really, really low bitrate to keep the file sizes small. But it does. It could sound great. It's free. It's beautiful. It's open. It's clear. It's unencumbered. You know, all those good, nice, positive, happy, floating words. That's AUG Vorbis, and that's what we're using from now on here at the Bad Apples. And I encourage you to, you know, like I say, just band together with me on this. Support AUG Vorbis. If you have to transcode it, in order to get it onto your media player, go for it. That's just, you take that one extra inconvenient step and transcode it. Don't know how to transcode? Have no fear, I'm going to teach you. If you listen, see, lately I've been listening to a lot of podcasts at work on a computer. And I know a lot of people listen to podcasts on a commute. Again, I just encourage you to take the extra step and just, if you have to, take the OGG file, transcode it over to like MP3 or MPEG-4, depending on what your media player supports. And you know, if it can take an MPEG-4 file, I encourage you to use that, because that is at least an open standard, not an open standard, it is at least a standard, and there are legal ways of achieving an MPEG-4. Whereas MP3, if you are making a file that will be decoded by an MP3 program and you are not paying licensing fees to the Motion Picture Expert Group, then you are breaking a law somewhere. There's an intellectual property law that you are breaking. So even if you're doing it with all free software, well, especially if you're doing it all with free software, you are technically speaking, in the eyes of these people who are enforcing the proprietary software and a lot of the laws that we live under, you are a criminal. Another good reason to have no MP3 associated with this site. We're all law-abiding citizens here. So there's VLC, which will play OGG on your Windows box at work, your Linux box at home, and your Mac box if you have one. VLC player is what it's called. It's probably in your repository. If not, you go to videolan.org. That is videolan, as in local area network, not land. Like, this is my land, this is your land. It's videolan.org. And it will have a download. It'll auto-detect your OS and everything. It'll be really easy. They package it for practically every OS. If you're running it on an Amiga, it will have it. Download that. Install that. The transcoding process is really, really simple. I'm going to assume you're doing this from your Linux box, but it's the same whether you're doing it on Windows or Windows or a Mac or Linux, except one little tiny thing. So you've got VLC open, right? You go to File. If you're on Linux, it's called Wizard. Control-W, Wizard. If you're on Mac, it's Streaming/Exporting Wizard. I'm assuming it's probably the same for Windows, probably Streaming/Exporting Wizard. It opens up a new dialog box that says, I believe it actually says, Streaming Transcoding Wizard on all versions. And you have a choice to stream to a network or to transcode and save it to a file. So I'm going to select Transcode. Next. And now it says, okay, select your stream. This is talking about your input stream, which is basically a fancy way of saying your file. So you go to choose, and you navigate through your file system until you find Podcatcher. For me, it might be in your music folder, it might be anywhere. Here is an OGG file. I'll open it. And now it plugs that song name into and the file path into the box, and I say next again. Now it says transcode. It's giving me a choice. Do I want to transcode a video or audio or both? Well, in this case, it's just audio, so I'll put a little check mark by audio. Now I have to choose my codec and my bitrate. I'm not going to go into technical details here. If you need technical details on all of this stuff, listen to my HPR series on codecs at hackerpublicradio.org. But transcoding audio, you have a choice. You need to choose the codec that you know that your player supports. Most likely, your player supports MP3. So if you want to be super safe, do MP3. If you want to be a little bit adventurous and see what exactly your player will support, go for the MPEG-4 audio file. That's what I'm going to do right now. And I'm going to knock it. I'm going to knock the bitrate down to 64 kilobits per second. Keep the file small. You don't need to hear me that clearly. I didn't really encode this, I don't encode my episodes at a very high quality anyway, so I would keep it low. Click Next, and now it's asking for the encapsulation format. Since I'm doing MPEG, I'll do MPEG-4, MP4. This doesn't really matter, to be honest. You can always change this later on, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And now you say next, and now you'll say there's additional transcoding options. We really only want it to select the file to save out to. So I select that, navigate through my file system, call the file something, and I'm just going to dump this right onto my Rockbox machine myself, but you can put it anywhere you want. Save, and now I've got a file name there in the blank, so I say next. And then there's the summary of, you know, where your input is coming from, what format you've chosen, what kilobit what bit rate, the encapsulation format, etc., etc. And then you click on finish, and it'll look like it's kind of playing the file, but really what it's doing, obviously, is transcoding it. And when it's finished, you'll have that former AUG file as a, in this case, an MPEG-4 file. Now, a lot of media players will want a certain extension at the back of the MPEG-4 file. I don't have a media player with anything other than Rockbox on it, so I can't test this out, but if I'm not mistaken, I think, for instance, iPods want to see .m4a. Because if they see .mp4, they assume it's a video, and they'll panic. Not kernel panic, but they do not like to see a .mp4 without video associated with it, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But what I would do if I were you is, once it's finished encoding, I would try to throw it on my the iPod or the media player, whatever you're using. See if it takes, see if it plays. If it doesn't, rename it .m4a. That is M as in Mary, 4a as in audio. And throw that on the media player. See if that works. If that doesn't work, I'm out of guesses. Just bite the bullet. Go out as MP3. Don't tell anyone. I won't tell the MPEG if you don't tell. So that's about it. So support AUG, and let's band together and be really strong and firm on our stance for free software. Back when Linux Reality was still airing, Chess Griffin, around Christmas time, if I recall correctly, would say that a cool way for people, you know, since I guess he was getting offers of donations or something, and he was saying that a cool way to contribute to Linux Reality would be to give money, the money that you would donate to Linux Reality, to whatever open source project you cared to contribute to. And if you did that, again, if I recall correctly, he would send you the Linux Reality, he sent like all, I think the first time he did it, it was all 50 episodes that he'd done up to that point. And then the next time he did it, it was, you know, the full set, 100 episodes or whatever. And I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was a really nifty idea. And so, as a Christmas time thing, I was thinking we might want to sort of do a similar thing. Now the thing is that I'm a little bit lazier maybe than Chess Griffin was, and I don't really want to put all the Bad Apple episodes onto CD and send them out, just because. You know, I mean, they're all online. It just seems a little bit weird to put them onto CD and send them to people. And anytime you want to download them, you can just download them off the server. So I don't really see, you know, that much of a point in offering the episodes on CD to you as retribution for, or recompensation rather, for you to donate to a good open source project. Now, what I could do is offer the highest donator a bag of really, really good, one of my favorite coffee blends that a friend of mine, I literally had to have a friend pick this stuff up in the only coffee shop that it is sold at, which is called the Water Canyon Cafe, which is located near Joshua Tree, California, which is just about as isolated as you can imagine. I mean, it's up in the mountains somewhere. It is far away from anything that I know of. I mean, it's the closest city you could think of is LA, but it's not very close. It's quite far from there. So this is an old town. I think it's Joshua Tree proper. It's an old town. It's got a lot of, if I'm not mistaken, it's got a lot of the gold mining camps there, you know, like the old gold mine stuff in that area. So it's an interesting area, and one of the coolest features about it for me is the Water Canyon Cafe. It's a really nice little coffee shop, totally independently owned. You know, it's not associated with anyone like Starbucks or, you know, it's not subsidized by Pepsi or anything like that. It's not Nescafe, anything. It's Water Canyon Cafe. And they have independent music there a lot, and it's just really cool. It's a cool place. And they have this great blend of coffee there called the Sawtooth Mountain Mud. That is what it's called, Sawtooth Mountain Mud. And it is delicious. Especially if you've been drinking, you know, the normal, like Nescafe or Folgers or, you know, those kinds of typical everyday name brands. You drink some of that, and then you go have a cup of Sawtooth Mountain Mud, and it's an experience difficult for me to accurately describe in words. So this is good stuff, and I have an extra bag pound of unground Sawtooth Mountain Mud that I can send to anyone who gives, you know, let's say the most to any given open source project. And when I say the most, I'm not talking hundreds of dollars, you know, I'm just talking about like a reasonable donation that you can manage. And the only reason that I'm not offering to send a bag to everyone is because I just don't have a bag of it. I don't have that many bags of it. It's a rare coffee. I don't I'm hundreds of miles away from the cafe that sells it. I can't find it anywhere else, you know. So that's the deal. If you're into it, if you like coffee, and if you like open source, free software kind of goes hand in hand. So just, I don't really need any more, you know, I mean, I think we're all pretty honest. So if you just tell me what project you donated to and how much you did donate, you know, I'll wait a little while. I'll give it a couple of weeks or whatever, see once all the tallies come in and see who donated the most, and then I'll send the coffee. Oh wow, what timing. I mean, we were just talking about coffee, and it sounds like it's time for a coffee break. Well, I'm gonna actually go grind up some of the coffee, not from the prize bag. I'll grind it up from my own bag, Sawtooth Mountain Mud. Pour myself a nice cup, and I'll be right back. I suggest you do the same. Couple of weeks ago on the Bad Apples, I announced a Blender interface suggestion for a Blender video editor, and I followed up with that on Linux Cranks at linuxcranks.info. Announcing really that I thought that if we could contribute anything to the Blender project, it could be number one, this idea for the video editing modification of the Blender code, and a MacBook, not one of the new silver MacBooks, just a white normal MacBook, to a developer who could work on the project. This was, I think, wrongly perceived as an offering of a prize or a reward or anything like that. It's really meant to just be a contribution. Both ideas. It's not a contest, nothing like that. Anyway, people have been asking me, you know, about how that idea has been coming along. So far, there have been no takers on that. There seems to be interest from the people that I have talked to. They think it's a good idea. They appreciate the design, everything like that. It's just, it doesn't seem like anyone's picking it up and running with it yet. And the two things that come to mind when I think of this are number one, that's not how it works. That's not how it happens. You know, that I need to jump in there and like start some code or something like that. Again, I don't believe that I have the ability to do that, but that is something that I will probably look into. You know, it was suggested to me on IRC that maybe I could set up the SVN structure on my computer so that I could grab the code off of Blender's out of Blender's SVN repository and look at it and just poke around and see if I could make any sense of it. I really don't believe that I will be able to. I've done that kind of thing before with projects. I've looked at the code and I've come back completely confused. My knowledge right now is not where it needs to be to make any sense of that, I don't believe. But I'm going to try that anyway. And the other idea is that it just needs a central location other than my email address to kind of gather momentum. So I'm going to be establishing either a SourceForge project dedicated to this idea, or a Launchpad project, or, you know, both, whatever. So just try to get some more interest and more of a central location for the ideas to happen. Whether anything will come of any of this, again, I don't know. But the idea is out there, it's up for grabs, and we'll see what happens. That is about all I have to report on the subject at this point. But I will definitely keep you posted if I hear anything further. I definitely do not intend to be just someone coming up with like random ideas, you know, and not really doing anything about them or with them. So I intend to, you know, keep this idea very much alive and really look into options of making it happen. And like I say, if that means that, you know, in 2 years after I've finally learned the languages that I need to learn with the proficiency that I need to have them in order to make this happen myself, then I will gladly do that. And it's definitely something that I'm interested in, and it's something certainly that is driving me, you know, to educate myself in programming, something to work toward. Or whether it's just someone comes along and says, yeah, actually, this is really a good idea. I'm a developer, and I've got nothing better to do right now, so I will do it. That would work, too. So, you know, whatever the case turns out to be, it's not just an idea that I had that I decided to throw out there and then walk away from. It's something that I definitely want to follow up with, mainly because, just like everyone says about open source, you know, it's an itch that I need to scratch. For myself, I want a really, really good video editor under Blender, under Linux even. And I believe Blender is the one for that. And if you look at if you look at Avid and Final Cut Express or Final Cut Pro, you've got, those are jokes in terms of video editing. I mean, obviously they're very, very good, and they're being used by the majority of the, you know, movie business. But if you look at them in terms of their capabilities, they're powerful, but they're not incredible. What's incredible to me are programs like Smoke and Flint and things like that, which are, you know, the high end. You have to literally buy the computer as well as, you know, like an extra processor unit and stuff like that, and the computer. It's a whole system set up for, you know, a couple of tens of thousands of dollars. These are just mind-blowing applications, and quite frankly, Blender is more in the class with those guys than it is with Avid and Final Cut. So to harness Blender and to make it a video editor as well, the possibilities make my mind hurt, my head hurt. So, something I'm interested in, something I will follow up on, nothing to report yet. Listener feedback. Yeah, we have got listener feedback this episode. It's always great to have some listener feedback. Always fun. So let's see. The first one was from Nicholas, who I actually met at the Ohio Linux Fest, and he wrote me an email, I guess a warning email about the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, which If you've ever seen the original The Day the Earth Stood Still, directed by Robert Wise, it's a fantastic movie. By some weird chance, the main character of that movie is named Klaatu. Go figure, same spelling and everything. And by some weirder chance, his really dangerous robot is named Gort, which if you heard season one, you'll recognize that my co-host used to be Gort. So it's a bizarre coincidence, I know. Gort and Klaatu, but there you go. It's a really great movie. You should watch it. The Day the Earth Stood Still. It's just fantastic. And it is the movie from which the Army of Darkness stole or referenced the line Klaatu Barada Nikto. The remake features Keanu Reeves and is directed by someone else and is just completely, it's a remake. And I'm sure it differs in many ways. And I'm sure if one was able to view this remake as just a completely new movie, forgetting that it was a remake, I'm sure it would be entertaining, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. I'm pretty picky about my sci-fi. I want it to be good, you know? But, yeah, so the new movie exists. What can I say? I'm probably not going to see it, so a lot of people have been asking me, you know, are you going to try to see the new one? Probably not. Not anytime soon. Maybe if I get, like, a bunch of friends together who also, I mean, like, who are serious aficionados of sci-fi, not, like, you know, sort of fair-weather sci-fi friends, like, real sci-fi friends. Maybe if I get them together, maybe we could sit through it somehow. Probably not, though. So, that's the answer to that question. And thanks, Nicholas, for writing in. Let's see, another email. Well, you know what? I mean, there haven't been so many other emails, per se, but I have to say that there's been a really, really great, really nifty sort of just a lot of Unix porn activity. And Unix porn, if you didn't hear on previous episodes, it's not porn, it's Unix. It's a website that I started, obviously as kind of a joke, you know, rather than having porn, you have, like, Unix porn, which would be just screenshots of people's desktops. Just because when I'm at work, and I'm not able to run Linux, I get lonely for Linux, you know, I want to see Linux desktops. So I like to look at Linux desktops online, like screenshots. And I would always just type in, like, Linux desktops in Google and do a Google image search and try to find... But, I mean, you see them all after a while, you know. So I needed a central repository of a lot of different Linux desktops. I wanted to see everything. I wanted to see KDE, GNOME, XFCE, Fluxbox, OpenBox, you name it, I wanted it. So Unix porn... the only reason it wasn't Linux porn is because that was already taken. So unixporn.com is a place that you can see all kinds of desktops. And I will say that I've gotten just a fantastic response on it. And it would be hard to list everyone who has contributed to that so far. But the most recent ones, like I've Jeremy the Geek. You might know him as Germ in IRC, has posted some screenshots. Larry Bushy, you might know him from Going Linux, posted a screenshot there. Snack Machine B does Fluxbox themes. He's posting a lot of stuff there. It just makes your mouth water for you just want to start using Fluxbox or OpenBox and use some of his themes because they're just really, really fantastic. And you just, you know, you name it. I mean... If you're in IRC ever, chances are you've seen some of these people around. If not, who cares? It doesn't really, you don't need to know the people to appreciate the desktop. So check out unixporn.com. And if you've got a desktop that, of yours, you know, that you like, and I'm not talking about like desktop art necessarily, I'm just talking about like the desktop that you look at every day, like your working environment. Just take a screenshot and post it, because believe it or not, you might think it's boring, you might think it's bland, but think about like all those Windows users and Mac users out there who have never seen even a bland Linux desktop. You know, they come across this website or your screenshot on a Google image search, they're going to be impressed. And frankly, it's not the whiz-bang eye candy stuff that I'm interested in anyway. It's more for the, I'm just interested in the desktops. I just like to see what other Linux users have, you know, how they have their desktop configured and stuff like that. And it's neat because on Linux, I mean, there's so many different ways to configure it, you know. So take a screenshot, post it on unixporn.com. You can establish an account and post it yourself. I know now. I didn't know that before, but people are doing it, and I'm like, how are they doing this? I thought they had to email me their screenshots, but it turns out there's a whole user system there. So just sign up and post. It's cool. If you need more room, if you're posting that much, let me know, and I'll increase your quota. And that brings episode 13, the exciting Christmas episode of The Bad Apples, to a close. Sorry I don't have anything extra Christmassy to do for this episode, but I just don't. Other than the open source, you know, contribution contest, coffee contest. That's Christmassy. That is about giving and stuff like that, so we're good. So yeah, just email me, let me know if you contribute money to an open source project. Or, you know, if you're, like, a coder and you've, like, done an entire project yourself, let me know. Maybe you would deserve the coffee at that point. You know, we'll just play it by ear. It's not a big deal. It's just a bag of coffee. But it's good coffee. It's really good coffee. Trust me. Maybe the winner, we could try to do, like, an interview and see what they think of the coffee over the, later. But anyway. So have a good Christmas. Stay warm and stay healthy. Have a great Christmas, and I will certainly see you next year, probably. Bye. Ho, 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 ho.